I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pick up your book bags. Grab your notebooks. It's time to go on campus with Denton.
Give me my theme music.
All right, we're going to do this during the season. I think we did it this way last year, too. Save all of the college football stuff for Tuesdays because we're too skins intensive, NFL intensive on Mondays. It was a wild college football Saturday. Denton's college football recap begins with which game?
We're starting with a big upset. We're starting with Northern Illinois' upset over Notre Dame because this time last week, Kevin, you, me, and a host of people across the country claimed that Notre Dame clinched their spot for the college football playoff. And to be fair, we should have been right. Their schedule is a complete cakewalk after beating Texas A&M, and it lasted literally 6 days because they turn around and do something that, unfortunately, Marcus Freeman has now been a little too consistent with, which is losing to a group of five team and losing to a team that they should not have lost to and looking atrocious offensively in the process. Northern Illinois was a lot of fun. I had their quarterback on the SiriusXM show after. He was great. Their coach went viral for the amount of passion that he showed on the field after in the postgame interview. They're a fun team to root for, but you got to be scratching your head looking at this Notre Dame team that has a pretty good defense but just cannot figure it out on offense. Now with Riley Leonard, a quarterback who I thought was good last year at Duke, but that offense is tough to watch.
So two things from this game. First of all, I think I said this after the A&M game last week. I'm not seeing it with Riley Leonard in terms of his ability to throw the football. And I thought it was very clear against Northern Illinois that he can't throw the football. He does not process quickly enough. The ball that he does throw is late often. It's not super accurate. He's a very good runner as a quarterback. They're going to have to come up with something else offensively. But here's what just really irked me in this game. And I know that people were outraged by it. On the final drive for Northern Illinois, trailing 14-13, they had a 3rd-and-2 run with Notre Dame holding one timeout left. That was clearly a run for a first down. Like, it's not even close. The guy has the first down by a solid yard, if not more. They marked the ball short of the sticks, which allowed Notre Dame to call their final timeout, stop the clock with, I think it was like 38 seconds, 39 seconds, something like that, left in the game, and force the Northern Illinois team to kick the field goal, but leaving time on the clock for Notre Dame rather than what they were setting up for was a walk-off field goal. I mean, those are the kinds of things you got to be able to fix. The NFL's fixing them now. You know, we're getting the, you know, replay review without the coaches challenging. We had another one last night. We had one in our game on Sunday on the screen where Graham Barton was downfield, called for downfield, but then replay came in without any sort of challenge and said, no, he wasn't. The play stands. And it was a big, you know, Rashad White screen pass for 25, 30 yards, whatever it was. I know that they don't do that in college, but oh my God. I mean, that thing was challenged. And then it's just amazing to me how blatant it was that they didn't want the game to potentially end with a walk-off field goal. You know the play I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I do. I couldn't believe they got that one wrong.
So they had to kick it on that play, which meant that, you know, they couldn't run another play to try to get it closer. But, you know, he knocked it through, and Notre Dame still had 35 seconds to try to get in range for themselves. But that ended up resulting in a 60-some-odd yard field goal that got blocked. And Northern Illinois pulled off the upset. Was Northern Illinois supposed to be any good in the MAC this year?
I think they were supposed to be one of the better teams in the MAC. They certainly weren't supposed to do what they did on this weekend. I mean, they were 28.5-point dogs.
Do they have anybody else on their non-con that's any good?
I think there's actually one other game on there. I was looking at this weekend. There was one other game because, you know, the Group of Five is relatively wide open. They're on the road against NC State at the end
NC
of the
State
month.
On the road?
Yeah, at the end of the month. They play Bowling Green, who played Penn State really difficult, really tough this weekend as well. But outside of that, their schedule is relatively flimsy.
Yeah, but Bowling Green actually was very much in the game against Penn State. It was interesting that the week one games where Penn State and Notre Dame won very, you know, but in Notre Dame's case, a very tough, hard-fought, physical, draining, you know, game on the road in College Station. You know, Penn State winning in Morgantown against West Virginia. They come back home. They've got MAC opponents in Bowling Green in Northern Illinois. You know, it's one of those spots, man, you just got to think about in the future after a week one, you know, big win. You know, at the very least, you want to play the dog on the first half, you know, point spread or even money line, because Bowling Green, I think, led that game at halftime.
Yeah, they did.
And Northern Illinois had, I think, a 3-point lead at halftime. So, and you know, they were getting they were getting 28, so they were getting every bit of probably 17 in the first half. You know, something like that, because the second half they expect it to be over and Notre Dame to have a bunch of subs in the game. That did not happen. Fun to watch the coach's reaction. I mean, so emotional. He's a Northern Illinois alum. It was, you loved, that's one of those things that just makes sports great, you know, to see something like that happen. I remember Northern Illinois beat a ranked, I think Maryland was ranked 11th in the country. This was a Ralph Friedgen year. And, they won the ACC title in 2001, his first year. It was either the second year or the third year, and Maryland was loaded. They came back. They were a top 15 preseason team, and they lost to Northern Illinois on the road. They went and played that game, whatever part of Illinois they played at, and Northern Illinois was good, and they got beat in that game. But that's the biggest win, obviously, in program history. That's got to be one of the biggest wins ever in MAC history. They've pulled off a lot of upsets over the years, but I don't know if they've ever beaten number five on the road.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, maybe if we go back years and years, but then you get to the question of, well, how is it even still the MAC at that point? It's definitely one of the biggest in conference history.
Yeah. The MAC always, early in the season, they always play a bunch of Big Ten teams in particular, and sometimes they pull off some, you know, they pull off a couple of wins here and there against, you know, the lesser Big Ten teams, and sometimes they're really close for a while, like Bowling Green was at Penn State, but that was really dramatic. All right, what else?
So the biggest game on, at least on the schedule, was Texas and Michigan, and we got another reminder of why Quinn Ewers is as highly regarded as he is, because he has a really good ability to go into really tough environments and seemingly be unmoved by it. He did it last year against Alabama, and then he went into the Big House, and you know that Michigan offense is bad. They don't have a quarterback, but defensively, they're still a really good team. You know, they have this ability that most of the good teams do to replenish very easily on the defensive side of the ball, so they're really good on defense, and it did not matter. I mean, Quinn Ewers just came in there and beat them up. He was really impressive to watch. The way that he's handled the early portion of this season with the Arch Manning stuff, and even going back to last season, has been really, really impressive for a guy that a lot of people didn't love coming out of high school because of the way that he came out of high school.
So this was a smell test pick. I had Michigan. Personally, I had him for, you know, size. And I sat down at 12 noon, turned on Gus Johnson and Joel Klatt. I think, by the way, he does a great job as an analyst, just as a side note. Quinn Ewers was really impressive. I mean, NFL impressive. He's got a very quick release. He is a guy that you can see, sees it, processes it very quickly. I was really impressed with the game he played against a team that was still supposed to be pretty good defensively. You know, you had a big-time matchup between Texas's offensive line and Michigan's defensive line. The Michigan quarterback is terrible.
Awful.
At this point, maybe he'll get better, but they could not move the football because he could not throw it to people who were open on some of those first drives. And it was, you know, a lost cause. They brought Donovan Edwards back. You know, Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards. I mean, Corum was the star, but Edwards had some big games and big moments for Michigan. And, you know, there were a couple of runs here and there. Loveland dropped a ball. He then fumbled the ball. But this guy, Davis Warren, I mean, you got to do better than that. I mean, he's terrible. They got the other guy that's more of a runner. He was completely overwhelmed, could not hit anybody that was open. I thought there was a play early in that game, Denton, because the crowd was into it. I've been to the Big House. I've been to the Big House for an Ohio State-Michigan game. I have to tell you that of all of the iconic venues I've been to, you know, I don't know, six or seven of them, a lot of them I haven't been to. Death Valley, for me, LSU is number one. There's not even a close second. I went to Bama LSU at night several years ago. But I went to a Michigan-Ohio State game several years ago. The Big House is overrated as a venue. It's not loud. It's wine and cheese. So is Texas, by the way. You know, when you're in Austin for a game, I called the Maryland-Texas game when Maryland went down there and opened the season on Labor Day weekend and beat them because Johnny had a family engagement, so I got to call that game. And it was not, you know, a great crowd. It also, that day, was an 11 a.m. start. But Michigan has a stadium that's really, like, open. You know, first of all, you walk down into the stadium. It's one of those things where when you're at ground level outside the gates, you're actually at the top of the stadium. But the way it's built, the noise isn't great. But that place on Saturday on TV, it was awesome. And there was a play early in Texas's first drive. It was a third and like 16, and Ewers threw to the guy, the Alabama transfer that transferred. What's his name?
Bolden.
Not Bolden.
Or Isaiah Bond. Isaiah Bond.
Isaiah Bond. Sorry. Thank you. And they moved the chains. They ended up missing a field goal on that drive. But I was like, oh my God, that was a big time throw by this dude. And then, you know, the key was, would Davis Warren, the quarterback, be able to move them, or would they be able to shred Texas's defense, you know, up front with their O-line, with their backs? And it just didn't happen. And the game was one-sided. Texas looks really good. They've got to play Georgia at home on October 19th. They've got to play Oklahoma the week before that at home. I mean, that's going to tell the tale. Now, Texas is a playoff team if they split those games. And Oklahoma's not good, really. They're not that good.
They don't have an offense
this year. But that's the stretch of schedule. Oklahoma, you know, and Georgia in conference games, SEC conference games, in back-to-back weeks that they, you know, the truth is really all they have to do is split them and they're in the playoff.
Yeah, that Georgia game on October 19th, everybody got to circle that one on their calendar. I mean, that's going to be an absolute headbanger between two of the top teams in the country, and we're getting it in the month of October. Quinn Ewers is the best quarterback in college football, I think, Kevin. Now, the bar is low because the general theme that I have come to realize in the first 2 weeks is that there are a lot of teams that are not confident in their quarterback play. You have the regulars with like your Ole Miss.
Is Alabama confident in their quarterback play?
Alabama is. I would say with Jalen Milroe,
have
they
you
are.
Watched Jalen Milroe in these first two games?
Not a ton because I haven't played anybody.
I had South Florida the other night plus the 31, so I watched a lot of that game. By the way, it was almost one of the worst beats of all time. they were basically in the game. It was 14-13 fourth quarter. Then it was 21-16. Alabama scored three touchdowns in 3 minutes near the end of the game, and they were one touchdown away from covering. But that's beside the point. Jalen Milroe, to me, looks like he did last year. He is a lethal playmaker off schedule as a runner. everything is still late throwing the football. Sorry, he's not there yet as a thrower. And you can be that against Western Kentucky and South Florida, and they play Wisconsin this week on the road, and Wisconsin's not good. But is it 2 weeks after that or the next week that they face Georgia and Tuscaloosa?
2 weeks. So on the 28th, September 28th, they get Georgia. Yeesh. This one's the Wisconsin game is going to be in Wisconsin, which that'll be a tougher environment, and I believe.
What's the line in that game? I haven't looked at a lot of the college lines yet.
Alabama is the favorite.
They got to be a big favorite,
they're
right?
A big favorite. They're 16.5-point favorites.
Yeah, Wisconsin stinks.
Yeah, they struggle. They are one of the teams that does not have a good quarterback.
Like Iowa, they just can't find the quarterback, and they can't find an offensive scheme or a coordinator that can figure it out around, you know, average quarterback.
Because we like Phil Longo. You know, he's joined our program a couple of times. They haven't found a guy, which is – but it speaks to kind of the point that I was making, which is, like, there's just not a lot of great quarterbacks this year in college. Now, I will say the most impressive performance I thought was Tennessee – against NC State.
Can you pronounce that guy's last name?
Nico Iamalava, something like that. I had it phonetically written down. And
yeah,
he looked good, but it's really just the how impressive them as a offensive unit looked. I don't think NC State's particularly good. I'm kind of over the Grayson McCall hype. I think people loved him because he went to Coastal Carolina a couple years ago and their field was teal. I don't know that he was actually like this great quarterback, but their offense is really good. You know, and now that they have a guy that can actually hit underneath throws, not like Joe Milton, who could just throw it deep, their offense is really, really good in Tennessee.
The quarterback conversation, I mean, I think everybody expects Shedeur Sanders, maybe Carson Beck, but I'm with you after watching Quinn Ewers, and we'll see how he does the rest of the way. It would not shock me. We're here after 2 weeks of the season, but it would not shock me if Quinn Ewers ends up being the number one quarterback picked in the draft next year.
Him or Cam Ward. I love Cam Ward, too.
Yeah, there's a different style of play.
Definitely a different style. I would like to see Cam Ward do it against better teams. Yeah, Shedeur.
Well, let's
just
say this, because we said this about Jaden Daniels last year. We basically said it in week one or week two. How is any mock draft, serious mock draft board at this point, how, if you don't have Jaden Daniels in the first round, you can't be taken seriously.
Right.
And then a few weeks later, it's like, if he's not in the top 15, you can't be taken seriously. And then by the time we got to that Bama game in that first half, I'm like, this dude's a top three pick. I mean, he's going to win the Heisman, and he's a top three pick. We never did say he should be number one over Caleb Williams. I mean, we suggested that, you know, it could possibly happen, but Caleb always seemed like a slam dunk. There's no slam dunk for the first quarterback taken in next year's draft. All right, what else?
How about, speaking of Shedeur Sanders, how about the way that Nebraska dominated? And while we're on the topic of Shedeur, he does not handle himself well. Nobody at Colorado seems to handle themselves well when asked tough questions in the post game. There are some people around the college world, and I'm sure this is going to trickle into the NFL, that were not pleased when Shedeur Sanders immediately threw his offensive line under the bus after the Nebraska game. Now, in fairness, he was right, because they got destroyed by Nebraska, which I knew was going to happen. I had Nebraska for the maximum, but Shedeur Sanders does not handle himself well in lines of tough questioning. That could hurt his draft status. If that, back to that conversation with who's the first quarterback, I don't know that teams are going to love the way that he carries himself.
So, real quickly before we get to Prime and his son Shedeur, this game was an absolute beatdown. Now, I actually kind of was not blown away by Raiola, the freshman quarterback, but it's a freshman second game. Lincoln was on fire Saturday night. There is a real belief that Nebraska football is back, and they wanted to win this game, and they wanted to win it easily, which they did. They had a 28-0 halftime lead. Just so you know, they won 28-10. In college football, when you are like going to be really good, it's not 28-10, it's 56-6. But anyway, a couple of things. Shedeur Sanders does the same thing he did last year, and part of it is offensive line. I get it. He holds it too long. He doesn't see it quickly enough. When he does, I love the way he throws the football. I love his cool demeanor. I love his ability to kind of create off schedule. But he gets sacked an awful lot. And a lot of it is he was sacked 52 times last year, for those of you that don't know. He's been sacked 7 times in the first 2 games this year. And their offensive line, they went out and they upgraded it. You could probably tell people, you know, all of the portal transfers and the recruits they had in, but they totally, you know, Prime's whole focus in the offseason was to protect his son at quarterback, and they're not doing a very good job of it. And Pat Shurmur, by the way, is the offensive coordinator. I don't know who ever thought he was a great offensive coordinator, but whatever. This Colorado thing and the Prime thing just has to stop. Like, they're a 3-win football team. They were a 4-win football team last year. They're a 3-win. These guys can talk all they want about people dissing them in the media and the Denver people dissing them. Well, they are writing what they are seeing, and what they're seeing is the truth, and that is that the team stinks. And it's not particularly well coached. Deion completely blew an opportunity at the end of the first half to use timeouts to create an opportunity to score. He didn't. And then he actually realized it. And he's like doing, you know, the my bad thing. You're the head coach. You can't my bad on a timeout that gives you a chance in a big spot to get the ball back for your team. It was horrendous. Or they had it. They had the ball, and he didn't call the timeout. It was so poorly done. They're poorly coached when you watch them. They're no better defensively than they were last year. Maybe a little bit better, actually. And, you know, they're going to win 2 or 3 games this year. 4 games this year. You know, and look, he was a story of college football for the first 3 weeks last year because of the success he had at Jackson State, bringing his sons. By the way, his one son, was that a broken arm that he had, Shiloh?
Forearm injury. I think a fracture on the forearm.
Yeah. Travis Hunter is special. I mean, he's got a chance to win the Heisman Trophy.
They are wasting him. That team sucks, and he is so good. I can't wait for him to wear burgundy gold next year. I'm speaking that one into existence.
But Shedeur Sanders leaving the field with 2 minutes left, and maybe there's some context here that I'm missing. So
he got looked at by the medical staff.
Okay, well then let's go with that then. Okay, let's go with that.
Yeah,
I just but Deion's got the guy that was one of the most polarizing players when he played, beloved by those that loved him. By the way, I loved Deion as a player. Absolutely loved him. I loved him as a media person. I loved the NFL Network NFL recap show that they did on late Sunday nights that I would always watch on early Monday mornings. Loved that show that he and Irvin did together with Rich Eisen?
I think it was Rich Eisen. Yeah.
Yeah. But the sensitivity to criticism from media people in Denver, of all places, hardly a tough media market, has got to stop until he actually produces something positive on the field. His team won 4 games last year. They are lucky to be 1-1 right now. They have joined the Big 12, which looks like it's got a lot of good to very good teams. It's going to be a hell of a battle in the Big 12 all year long. They're going to lose a lot this year. You know, they play Colorado State this coming week. That's one of those games that when you're in Colorado, you better win when you're Boulder, you know, when you're the big state, you know, Colorado school. But my God, they got K-State, they got Arizona, they got Utah on the schedule, they got Oklahoma State. I mean, this is a 4. The over-under on their season, wasn't it 4.5?
I think it was 5.5.
Okay. You know, How about get to, you know, the Tax Slayer Bowl before you get sensitive over criticism? I mean, just ridiculous, the shenanigans that have gone on there here over the last few weeks. I mean, part of me wonders, once his sons are gone, is he just going to quit coaching?
I was going to ask that. It's going to be weird to see what his next step is once his sons are gone. Because I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there will be someone, because we go through the coaching carousel every single year. I'm sure there's going to be some bigger program that lets a coach go and they kick the idea around of bringing in Deion Sanders. But if you're not coming in with the Louis luggage already in the form of your son, who's a really good quarterback, and then the number one overall recruit out of his recruiting class in Travis Hunter that was supposed to go to Florida State, like if you're not coming in with those guys, I don't know that you're as appealing to a bigger school in either the Big Ten or the SEC or just a bigger Big 12 school.
Look, he has the ability to sell. All right. This guy is a born sales and pitch man, and he's, you know, one of the former revered players in history and personalities. He can recruit. He can get players there. He's got to decide on, maybe I'm the figurehead coach and I get somebody in here to legitimately coach the team, get these players better, and I'll bring in the players. And then we're going to have perhaps maybe, you know, some rules around here to keep us from looking foolish on the national scene until we've actually won something. You know, because he can recruit. He can sell it with the best of them, and maybe he has to turn into the Ed Ogeron of, you know, Boulder. I mean, not the look of Ed Ogeron, but Les Miles. Les Miles is a better comp, right? Because Les Miles, not what you would call a genius X's and O's guy, but the guy could sling it with the best of him and brought him in from everywhere. So. Anyway, what else?
I mean, that pretty much wraps up week two. I thought it was a very fun week when on paper it really didn't look like it was going to be fun. Obviously, a lot of that was highlighted by Northern Illinois, but you had the Syracuse upset with Kyle McCord looking good over Georgia Tech. It was a really fun week, and as we get closer and closer to, it's really that first week of October. That first week of October is where things start to get crazy because now everybody's into conference play. So I'll give you the floor and the opportunity now to talk about your Turtles. I know they let a lot of people down who had them on a ticket.
Yeah, we'll do that after the break, but I want to mention two other things from Saturday. Number one was, after getting absolutely housed in the second half the week before in Atlanta to Georgia, Clemson came out against App State. App State's been a very good team at their level for a long time. Clemson scored in the game on their first eight possessions in the first half, and it was touchdowns on all of them. They had 35 points at the end of the first quarter. They had 42 points with 13 minutes to go in the second quarter, and they were up 56-13 in the first at halftime. They had the ball, let me repeat, eight times and scored eight touchdowns. Cade Klubnik, I'm not a big fan, had five touchdowns. So this was a Dabo, really? You know, you don't believe in the way I do it without using the portal, and we got blown out by Georgia and we suck. It was a statement game, as much as you can have a statement game against App State, but 56 points on their first eight drives. And then the other thing that I just wanted to mention is this, you'd have to tell me what the odds are on him, but I think Miller Moss is going to end up entering the Heisman Trophy conversation this year. He only threw one touchdown pass in the game. That game was on super late. I had it on. He's good. And USC is pretty good this year. And, I don't know where they're going to end up being in the Big Ten. There wasn't a lot expected. There's a lot of expected of Oregon, of the teams in the Big Ten. They play Michigan not this Saturday. I think there's a bye. I think they play them on the 21st. They're better than Michigan. And then they play Penn State at home in the Coliseum on October 12th. And by the way, after that, they are, you know, I was looking at it. I think it's, you know, they play Maryland, they play Rutgers. I think they play UCLA. They play UCLA every year. That's a crossover. And they play Notre Dame. They do play Notre Dame at the end of the year. But Miller Moss is going to enter the Heisman Trophy conversation at some point.
Right now he's 18-1.
How many players in front of him?
You get basically all the good quarterbacks. You get Nico Ai, you get Dylan Gabriel, you get Jalen Milroe, you get Jackson Dart, Carson Beck, Cam Ward, and then Quinn Ewers. So he's already in that conversation.
Yeah, okay. He's in that conversation. By the way, some of the guys you mentioned I think are going to fall out of the conversation. Give me that quick list again, sorry.
Quinn Ewers, Cam Ward, I think those guys will stay. Carson yes. Beck, Jackson Dart, those guys will stay. Then you get Milroe, who, as you mentioned, might fall out. Dylan Gabriel is definitely going to fall out unless
definitely
Oregon starts stomping teams, which they're not doing.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the preseason favorite, which I try to tell everybody because everybody always asks me at the beginning of the season about like Heisman voting. And I tell everybody, do not vote. Do not place money on the preseason favorite. They never win. It's been like 30 years since a preseason favorite for Heisman has actually won the award.
I like Miller Moss to be just a dark horse pick. And then there's just one other thing, and that is wherever Bill O'Brien's gone, he can coach. And the teams end up overperforming the expectations. He's 2-0 at BC. And they're going to they play Missouri this week. Missouri has not been scored on in the first two games of the season. This is a very interesting matchup. Cannot wait to see it. Missouri's kind of a hefty favorite. I was a little bit surprised at that. And look, he does not have the same level of talent that Missouri has right now. But Bill O'Brien's one of those guys. I mean, just the job he did at Penn State in the wake of the Sandusky thing and all of the sanctions, you know, was enough to kind of say, this dude can put it together. He had two winning seasons when they didn't have any scholarships and the whole world was kind of, you know, expecting them to fail. He had those years in Houston as a head coach before Deshaun Watson, you know, came around where they were going 9-7 with, you know, terrible quarterback play, horrendous quarterback play, and winning divisions. He's perfect for that market, perfect for that team and that school. BC is going to be good under Bill O'Brien, but that matchup with Missouri, who is they're good defensively, is a fun one on Saturday. I was surprised to see 16.5 as a number. All right, Dan Quinn. Yesterday on a couple of things from Sunday's game. Next, Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So you had Dan Quinn address the media after the game. And then on Monday, you know, after they've looked at the tape and they call their Mondays out there, Tell the Truth Mondays. You know, he explained it that it's really an important day for us. It's the only way it works that you guarantee the growth is to face the truth and really never run away from it. So the ability to detach from the emotions after losses, after wins, learn the lessons, those are huge, and that'll be huge for us this week. So, you know, he gave a little insight about, you know, Tell the Truth Mondays, what it entails. He said, I visit with the team. I talk about turnover margin. I talk about tackling margin, penalty margin, starting field position, and explosive plays from the game. Those are the five big topics that round out our style of who we want to be. I thought that was interesting because he basically just told you, you know, the specifics of what make up, you know, how they're going to view how the team played. You know, again, it's turnover margin, tackling margin, penalty margin, starting field position, and explosive plays from the games. And so there were a couple of, you know, specific players he was asked about. Of course, Jaden Daniels was one of them. Nikki Javala from the Washington Post just said, give me your assessment of quarterback Jaden Daniels. You know, after watching the film, was it confirmed with what he had said the night before? And this is what he said.
Yeah, I think it was confirmed. I think mostly, Nikki, from like the competitor side, I felt that. I think if you'd asked him, there'll probably be a few throws that he would either, you know, like to rip or where the progression may have taken him. But by and large, I felt from the competitor side, that was it. Those were some of the things I saw, even like on some of the runs. Like, we didn't have a lot of design quarterback runs, but some of the ones that he did, I think if he'd asked him again, he'd probably want to let it rip to one of the guys on some ops. So missed opportunities, those are the hard ones. I think the one to Terry to start the second half and those ones. But by and large, he really felt comfortable in those spaces.
Yeah, so, you know, the design quarterback runs, there were a few of them. I mean, a lot of the runs and a lot of the yardage were scrambles. You know, that's not a designed run. Option runs are not designed runs. They potentially are plays that end with him running, but they are options, you know, where he's sticking the ball in the gut of Brian Robinson Jr. or maybe Austin Ekeler. And then deciding based on what that outside player does, the linebacker or the 4-3 defensive end, to either keep it there or to pull it and run. The designed runs are things like quarterback draws, and they ran a quarterback counter in the game. They ran a quarterback counter in the third quarter. I got to tell you, seriously, I don't want to see quarterback counters. You know, Baltimore runs Lamar on a lot of quarterback counters where you're essentially, he's a running back, right? They're pulling the guard, they're pulling the center sometimes, and he's following them into, you know, the line of scrimmage, you know, looking for a hole, looking for a crease. You know, it's a running back play. They run quarterback sweep. They run quarterback power in Baltimore. Those are the plays, honestly, for this guy, I'd rather not see. Those are the plays that are in bunched up around the line of scrimmage, you know, at least on a zone read, a read option. You know, once he gets outside, you know, his vision can protect him a little bit. You go into a pile of people like he did on the quarterback counter that they ran in the third quarter. I don't know. I don't love those plays, but it looks like they're going to be a part of what they do. I think he's right in that there were plays where he had opportunities before he scrambled to really rip it. I talked about the second and eight at midfield in the third quarter that he got sacked on. There was definitely an opportunity for him to rip it there. He's going to learn. There was more on Jaden Daniels. This was on what Jaden can improve with experience.
Yeah, I think you know, when you're going through, like, most of the time, going through the progressions and probably with experience, I would say, like, taking sacks, like on some of the second down ones that went, John, one might have been around the plus 48 and one was in close to field goal range. So I think those ones, you know, where they kind of set you back to, you know, not give you the chance to continue a drive or, you know, potentially give yourself a chance at points. Those would be probably the two plays of not a sack onto those scenarios. So good question. And those would be the first thing that came to mind for me is, you know, field position and the loss of a sack.
Yeah, that first one that he's talking about is the play that I spoke a lot about in my Upon Further Review. The second and eight, you know, at the Tampa 46, and there's no other way to say it. You know, he did not, you know, see that play as he should have. There was an opportunity to step up and get rid of the ball for a first down to either Ertz or McCaffrey, move the sticks, and instead went backwards, got the ball knocked out of his hands. They recovered it. Tyler Biadasz did. But, yeah, those are the things that he can improve with experience, the coach said. And then there was one more about Jaden Daniels on if Daniels rushing the ball 16 times were too many rushing attempts and on how he coaches that.
Yeah, and certainly not all of those are designed quarterback runs. Right. So I think that's important to say. But yeah, I think he'd be the first to say the same thing, Scott, to say this is, you know, I had a chance to go rip it to somebody else. Sometimes you can see a rush or a pattern break and there's open space and you go. But yeah, for him, create it when it's there, you know, when you can get outside the pocket. We'd love to see him remain a passer first. And I think it's going to come with more experience, Scott, honestly. You know, when I can go extend it to throw it, when, hey, this play's over, I'll get rid of it and move on to the next play. So I think you'll see that trajectory continue, Scott, as we go. Certainly 18 carries is not the model, you know, that we're looking for, certainly with Brian and Austin and others here. But at the end of it, I do think we'll continue to grow in that spot, but certainly not by design to have that many.
Yeah, I mean, it's not by design to have 16 carries in a game, because 12 of them, 11 of them were scrambles. You know, there were obviously the zone read plays in which he scored two touchdowns on. There was the quarterback counter that I talked about. I think there was a QB draw in there somewhere. Those are designed. But, yeah, he had opportunities, and that would be the criticism. You know, two criticisms. He had opportunities to let it go, and he didn't. He decided to take off, and I think on a couple of occasions bail a little bit early. And then he wasn't accurate on a couple of balls. The third and three in the third quarter, or maybe the first, no, it was the first field goal attempt, the 47-yarder that missed. I mean, Zacchaeus is open. I think he read it correctly. It looked like that was the throw, the first down throw, and it was inaccurate. And then the deep one to Terry isn't accurate. And that's got a chance to score on that one as well. Let me also just say something that I said yesterday, but I really want to emphasize more after going back and watching the All-22. It was, I think, the kindest way of saying it. It was unwise and high risk to have Jaden Daniels in that game at the end. That's his first game. You have drafted him number two overall. You have seen enough to say he is ready to be an NFL quarterback in week one. And down 23 points in the fourth quarter of a game that is over, you cannot win this game. You don't have him in the game handing the ball off or making quick throws. You got him in the game, and while it's not a designed run, there are option runs. You're running read option plays at the goal line on a condensed field where there's going to be some contact. You know, the harsh way of saying it would be totally irresponsible. The kind way of saying it would be unwise and high risk. Don't do that anymore. I mean, we're okay not seeing him in the game in his first game ever, down 23. This is not RG3 in a playoff game against Seattle in which it's 14-10. You know, and, you know, by the way, the doctor's clearing him. This is your meal ticket. This is the guy that you're expecting to be around 10 years from now, where you can tell the next guy, as you told us in training camp, about the work habits and how, you know, Jaden took every rep and was involved in everything. And that's the way we do it around here. And he's got to earn it before he's named starter. You got to protect him at the end. There are people I know that are out there. Sheehan, it's football, man. He's competitive. I mean, that's part of the problem, is he is overly competitive, which I love about him. So he's not going to just be okay if you run a zone read to just leave it in the gut of the runner that he's, you know, meshing it out with. He had his helmet knocked off on one of those goal line plays. Too much risk, unwise to have him in that spot in the game. I honestly don't even think that that's much of a debatable conversation. If you want him in the game at the end to get reps, to get another score, to get some confidence, have him throw in the football in a quick game environment. Don't have him running zone read plays in short yardage, condensed field goal line situations where you know there's a chance he's going to take some hits. I mean, the only thing that would have pissed me off more is if they had run a quarterback counter play down there. All right. We'll finish it up with a thought or two when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're also free and live on the Odyssey app. So the results on the new kickoff rule for week one are in. 63.5% of the kickoffs in the first 15 games before last night went for touchbacks. That's under a 10% difference from last year. Not what they were looking for. They were looking for a lot more. Sean McVay, the head coach of the Rams, basically decided to kick touchbacks, and he said, I think just the unforeseen and knowing that there are not as many layers in coverage, there are possible vertical seams. I think we felt like the confidence we did have that we had in our defense to put the ball in the 30. So there were more kickoff returns. There weren't, I mean, last year was a record number at 73% touchbacks. Week one going into last night was 63%. I think they were expecting like half or, you know, more than, less than half of the kickoffs would be touchbacks. We're going to see this rule either go away or we're going to see the touchback get penalized more. It's 1 week. They'll, you know, we'll see how it plays out. They're not going to tweak anything. They've already said they're not going to tweak anything until they see probably September and October worth of results on this. All right, that's it for the day. Doc is in with Chris Russell. Stay tuned. That's up next.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.